Hey guys, welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast, and as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. Really glad to have you guys here today. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about some of the best places to visit in Japan outside of Tokyo. Now, I've compiled what is a pretty comprehensive starter list, but to be completely honest, there's no way that I can fit it all into one list, so we may eventually end up doing a part two or even three of this if that's something that you guys would be interested in. So to kick off this podcast episode, I'd actually gone onto Instagram and opened it up for a potential Q&A. I was going to do an entire Q&A episode right here, but one of the very first questions that I got was, outside of Tokyo, where are some of the best places to visit in Japan, in your opinion? And considering the fact that I have had the opportunity to travel pretty much the entire country. Now, that being said, there are still plenty of places I haven't been, but all the way from Hokkaido down to Kyushu, I have traveled extensively. In fact, my very first trip ever to Japan was exactly that. I got a Japan Rail Pass and traveled from north to south, basing myself originally in Tokyo, went all the way from Sapporo down to Beppu and spent 3 weeks total just traveling, hitting a new city every couple of days at least. It was a great trip. And since then, I've had the opportunity to travel a lot of places, and I want to be able to share that with you guys today. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and focus in mostly on places that are fairly easily accessible by public transportation, with a few exceptions. In fact, if I can, because the Japan Rail Pass itself is such a useful item, and for those of you who don't know what the Japan Rail Pass is, it is a 1, 2, or 3 week unlimited pass for Japan Rail available to visitors of Japan only. You have to have a visitor's stamp in your passport to get it. Unfortunately, people who live here can't get it. There are other passes that we can get, like the Seishin Juhachikippu, but we're not talking about all that today. We've covered that likely before. Today is about where to go. Now, the intro for this has started to drag on a little bit, so let's jump right in. I'm going to start kind of north and work my way down. Now, each area, I'm going to give you the area and give you maybe a 30 second to 1 minute kind of overview of why I think it's great. Now, keeping in mind that these are based on my experiences, there is so much to do in every place in Japan and so much rooted in the history of each area that if you're interested in one of these areas, I highly recommend you doing research outside of the information that I have shared, and you may discover something. You almost guaranteed will discover something that I haven't even brought up. So let's jump right in. So we know that Tokyo is great. Places like Osaka is great. Places like Kyoto have started to be visited way too much. But let's jump all the way up to Hokkaido. Now, again, just some of my personal favorites, but one of my biggest personal favorites is, and always has been, the city of Sapporo. The things that make Sapporo amazing to me is simply that in all of Japan, it is one of the more organized and planned out cities. The entire city is actually laid out in a grid, north, south, east, west, rather than street names. For a lot of the places, they just have like North 5, East 15, and you just go there and that's where you need to be. But on top of that, because it's in Hokkaido, you have access to so much culture and food and adventure. And Sapporo is one of those places that you can really enjoy no matter what the season. You see, it's obviously really well known for the Sapporo Snow Festival, so winter is great. And if you do go in winter, not a big fan of the cold, there is an entire and massive underground that spans a great deal of the city so that you don't even really have to step out into the freezing cold. Same can be said for summer when that summer heat hits. But One of the things that really makes Sapporo great is the fact that it is a central transportation hub right there in Hokkaido to give you access to some of the more unique or interesting places. There are little like hidden spots and lakes and everything like that spread throughout Hokkaido that are mostly accessible from Sapporo. And so it is a great place to go if you're looking to get outside of Tokyo and want a little more space. Just a little bit south of that is definitely a great area known as Aomori. Now, Aomori, if you are a regular viewer of the Tokyo Lens YouTube channel, you will know that this is one of the homes of Tsugaru or the Tsugaru Shamisen. A lot of the songs in the Shamisen repertoire are based around this area, and there are massive festivals like the Nebuta Matsuri. The Nebuta Matsuri is so visually spectacular that I wouldn't be able to accurately describe it here within a podcast episode, but I'll give it a shot. So one of the things that makes the Nebuta Matsuri so incredible is these giant handmade floats that, if I really simplify this, are basically made out of paper that's colored and lit up from the inside. So from evening to night, I just look it up. Trust me, the Nebuta Matsuri is, and it's not just about the floats, it's about the very unique atmosphere that this particular festival brings to it. It's about the music and the food and the feeling, and is very, very representative of the area of Aomori. Now, what if you do go up to this area, one of the things that I highly, highly and very obviously recommend is that you find yourself a restaurant or place where you can listen to a live Tsugaru Shamisen performance. This is a very, very obvious recommendation coming from me, somebody who lives their life focused around this instrument, everything from playing it to recording other players. But one of the reasons that I really recommend this is not just because Shamisen is great, but because if you've heard it online, if you've listened to a CD, listening to the Shamisen in person, face to face with a Shamisen just a few meters in front of you, is completely different. There's something about the percussive nature and the atmosphere of the player that cannot be put into audio or a video. It's one of those experiences that is really best had live. In the same way that if there was a food-based festival, I could walk around and show you all of the food. And, you know, I could eat it on camera and describe each bite. It would not be the same as if you were to go out to that festival yourself, enjoy the smells of the food and actually taste it yourself. This is the level of difference that there is between listening to Shamisen on a video or CD and listening to it in person. Now, I've spent a little more time on this area than I was initially anticipating, but one thing I do want to say about the Aomori area is it is surprisingly accessible by train. Keep in mind that the trains are going to be a little further apart, as in time-wise, sometimes once every 30 minutes, sometimes once an hour, or even less. Now, that being said, it wouldn't hurt to have a car in that area, but you don't necessarily need it. Going a little more south, there's an area that in 2005 I fell in love with just outside of Sendai, which is also a great spot, by the way, but it's called Matsushima. If you've never heard of Matsushima, it's one that I highly recommend Googling first and just taking a look at the area. Matsushima is, or at least was back then, a very quiet, peaceful area that is about the general look and feel and atmosphere and people. You see, in Matsushima, there is a boat tour that will take you through this set of little islets or mini islands spread through the bay. It's gorgeous. It's windy. And my favorite part of that area is, I think out of all the places I've been in Japan, I probably met the most people in my very brief trip there. You see, when I arrived, somebody greeted me and ended up giving me a little tour of the area, having lunch together, guiding me out to where the boat tours were. When I got out there, I met some more people. I believe it was like a couple, like a gentleman and his partner, and they were walking their dog, and we chatted on the train leaving there. I made another friend. It was one of the very first moments back in 2005 where I felt the atmosphere of the people outside of Japan, and it was so easy at the time just to speak and make friends in this area, and so it had a large impact on me, and I really recommend it, outside of the fact that it is a truly visually spectacular area and just one of those places that if you are going outside of Tokyo, you definitely have to go check out. Now, moving to the other side, closer to the Sea of Japan, there is an area called Ishikawa. Now, Ishikawa has no shortage of interesting little towns and spots, but one that I had the most recent interaction with is a small town called Noto. About 1 year ago, I put a video up on the YouTube channel about Noto. The area is, as many areas in Japan are, suffering from a loss of youth. The remaining population in this area is aging quickly, and they're suffering a lot for it. In fact, there's almost no young people whatsoever. I will, in case you haven't seen it, link the YouTube video for that one in the description box of this podcast episode. But when I went out there, the town was taking a very interesting approach to trying to bring more life into the area. Now, one of the things that makes the area really great, just to kind of prelude to this, is that you can go out into nature and actually pick some of the vegetation and eat it right there. Just wash it up, eat it, cook it, whatever you want. It's really great. And it's just a really peaceful and quiet place to be. One of the approaches that they are taking to try and revitalize or rejuvenate the area is a lot of the homes, the older, gorgeous Japanese homes in the area, have been turned into kind of what is like in Japan, it's kind of like a minpaku. And minpaku is similar in some ways, but not always, to like an Airbnb. It's basically somebody opening up their home for a guest to come and stay with them. Now, there are many gorgeous homes in this area that have been opened up to this kind of minpaku, you know, stay at our house format. But even more interestingly, one of the struggles they had with losing all the youth is that they had to shut down the school. And the elementary school has actually been turned into a makeshift hotel that you can stay in. So if you've ever wondered what it's like inside of a Japanese school, you can actually go out to this area and stay in the school there. Again, this trip was originally a trip that I had just done for YouTube, but when I talk to other traveler friends who have traveled around Japan, the area of Ishikawa is one that very, very often comes up. And very similarly to the Matsushima area, oftentimes people reminisce about a friend that they have made in that place. So if you're looking to get that feel or experience of countryside Japan, that is a great place to do it. And again, even the topic of countryside Japan is an interesting topic because there's no blanket answer to what is countryside Japan. On the surface area, it might seem like there is. You have rice fields, you have mountains, usually you have a dwindling and aging population because everyone's going into the bigger cities, but how they adapt to that and the culture and history of the area is very, very different in each. For example, just today, the day that I am releasing this particular episode, I released a video on going out to Sekigahara, which is near Gifu, and this place is very, very central in Japan. Pretty much everything kind of east to west just kind of passes through this area, and was one of the biggest sites, was the site of one of the biggest, if not the single largest, samurai battle in Japanese history called the Battle of Sekigahara. I'll also link that video in case you're interested in that kind of stuff. But this area, being very, very countryside, again, surrounded by mountains, has a very, very different feel than other areas like, you know, Noto and Sachon and so forth. Each place that you'll go, whether it be city or countryside, definitely brings with it its own flavor. So a lot of people are like, well, you know, I've seen the city, now I want to see the countryside. And in the same way that Tokyo and Osaka are both big cities, but both have very, very different feelings and cultures, which if you didn't know, they are night and day in terms of culture, people, everything. I feel like that is a topic for another time, but in the same way, the countryside areas are just as varied in terms of feel and culture. But coming back to the list, I find that I am expanding a little more on each of these than I had initially anticipated, but I just feel there's so much that each area has to offer. And again, I feel like I'm barely scratching the surface of each area. So continuing on, one of the things that had really surprised me is I was looking for a nice beach area, not too far from Tokyo, somewhere that I could do in a day trip, maybe just stay overnight. And there are no shortage of great areas, but one that I found a couple years back that I had never been to before, so I decided to roll the dice and go for it, was actually in Chiba. And the area is called Minamiboso. Now, Minamiboso has a real soft beach feel to it. It is a very, very gorgeous area. It is accessible by train, but once you get there, depending on where your hotel is, don't be surprised if you need to take a taxi. I had originally planned on just renting a bicycle once I got out there to get from the station to the hotel, but the staff were like, yeah, you're going to be biking up a mountain to get to that hotel. It looks like it's just on like a bit of a peninsula, but really it's quite a climb. We recommend a taxi. It'll cost you a bit more, but it'll be a lot easier. So I went for it, and it was, I can't really put it into words. I'm not that much of a beach goer, but it had a real coastal feel to it. The hotel overlooked the ocean. There were ships out in the water, giant hawks in the sky. It was a really gorgeous area to go to. I'm not going to elaborate on it too much more. It's one of those ones that I would recommend you Google. I had literally gone out there just to relax for like a day or two, enjoy the ocean and come back. So I didn't do much exploring, but the area stuck with me because it was really, really nice. Now, if you are looking for something a little more active in the beach, kind of the coastal feel, I feel like the very obvious option here would be going out to the area of Kamakura and Enoshima. This is a historically very, very significant area of Japan. I wouldn't be surprised if you already knew all about it, but in case you don't, touching on it, the area down there is known as the Shonan area. And the Shonan area is gorgeous in about 1,000 different ways. There are an incredible amount of shrines and temples spread throughout the area. Some are very obvious and have giant Buddha statues. Some are a little more hidden, like one of my favorites that you have to climb up and around a corner and go through a cave. And as you get to the other side of the cave, there's actually a temple or shrine dedicated to finance or money. I cannot remember the name of it off the top of my head, but if you were to Google like Kamakura money shrine, I'm sure you'd find some images of it. It's just so beautiful. It felt really cool to actually go through a cave in order to get to a shrine on the other side, which is also in an open area. In addition to this, this area is really well known for its beach culture. There is a gorgeous train line called the Enoden, which at some points runs just right beside the ocean. If you do rent a car, it is a great place for a drive. And there is an island out there. It's an island called Enoshima. I was confused. I was trying to decide if it was an island or peninsula. There's this bridge that goes out to it. It is an island. Don't let me mix you up. And Enoshima is like a day of exploration all in its own. And on Enoshima, for those of you who know the area or are considering going there, there is a place that I really, really enjoy called Eno Spa. Now, Eno Spa is near the entrance of the island when you get in on the right-hand side. And it's I guess, what you would call a spa, but it's more there are heated pools in there. There are different levels. There's like a waterfall inside that divides the inside and the outside. The pools are infinity pools. Off in the distance across the water, you can see Mount Fuji on a clear day. It is insanely affordable, borderline cheap. Like back in the days where I was traveling and trying to save money, I could go there and it wouldn't cause me a stress. It's only like 1,000 or 2,000 yen or something. It is a really, really great place to check out. Additionally, the area, especially around Enoshima and whatnot, actually has a couple surprisingly cheap hotels. So if you're looking at doing a 1 to 2 day trip from Tokyo, you can do it right from there. And again, this entire area, the area of Enoshima and Kamakura and the surrounding zone is, I could do an entire video or podcast episode just on everything that is out there. If you haven't been there and you don't know about it and you're planning on going or even interested, I highly recommend that you do the research and just find it. It's just, there's so much to do. I can't even begin to scratch the surface in this. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go back north just a little bit. One of the places that I truly enjoyed on my very first visit to Japan is an area called Kiso Valley. Kiso Valley is a very traditional old, you have that old Japan feeling as you go there. Very similarly to that, just south of it a bit, there is Tsumago Juku. It's kind of a restored Edo style town, which is really gorgeous and as of late has become somewhat popular for Instagrammers and stuff like that. All of these spots, in fact, basically that entire area is just fantastic if you want to get that old Japanese feel. It really does feel like old Japan. Continuing on with some of the areas closer to like Kamakura and Enoshima, closer to Tokyo and whatnot, there is the area of Yamanashi. Now, Yamanashi is best known for Mount Fuji and the Fuji Five Lakes. The entire area is spectacular. It's one of those areas that you can access by train, but if you have the opportunity, I personally would highly recommend getting a car. Enjoying that area via rental car just opens up so many more avenues of adventure. There are also stations that you can go to where you can rent bicycles just to explore some of the lakes and everything like that. It's also a great, great area to go out and do some camping. Pretty much every spot in that area, every valley, every lake, everything has a gorgeous view of Mount Fuji. And that's one of the greatest benefits, I think, to the area. as well as some of the food and just the drink and the people. The entire area of Yamanashi is one I would highly recommend. If you go south just a little bit, there is a peninsula called the Izu Peninsula. Now, this entire, you can't go wrong with the Izu Peninsula. You can go deep into the peninsula and enjoy the kind of more mountainous views, or you can stick to the edges of the peninsula where you will pretty much get ocean towns and have that really ocean-esque view and atmosphere. This area is really well known as well for its wildlife. And if you're interested in coming out and seeing like wild spottings of things like, you know, whales and dolphins and stuff like that, Izu is actually really well known for that. So I highly, highly recommend the Izu area. And continuing just a little bit more west, we get into one of the areas of Japan that I'm the most comfortable with, and it is the area of Mie. Now, there's not enough time to go over everything to do in Mie because it's such a big and wonderful area. It has everything from, for example, there is a place called the Nagajima Spa Land, which is a amusement park, which is just a ton of fun out in that area. But if we go a little more cultural, one of the very famous spots there is the Ise Jingu or Ise Shrine. It is a gorgeous and very large shrine with incredibly long history. And the area also has one of my favorite foods or snacks in Japan, which is called akafuku. Akafuku is like a red bean paste and rice cake, mochi kind of. It's just really, really great. Again, in Mie, there's an area called Iga. And Iga is probably best known as one of the homes of ninja in Japan. Now, when I went out to Iga for the very first time back in 2005, I truly enjoyed the ride out there. You see, getting out there is a little bit of a trip and a feat in its own, but you get some of the most beautiful views as you go. You see, the train, depending on which train you take, will take you along the side of a mountain. You can look down into the valley. As you get closer, there is a train painted like a ninja, which takes you right into the area of Iga. Just a little bit south of there, there is a town called Nabari, which is home to some of the most friendly people that Japan has to offer, and by far one of my top five favorite snacks in all of Japan, called katayaki. Katayaki is like a sweet senbei, which is kind of like a cookie, but it's very hard. And they were originally thought of as like ninja food because they're very long lasting. They keep for a very long time. But when you purchase them, they actually come with a small wooden hammer, which you use to strike the middle of the katayaki and break it into pieces so that you don't break your teeth as you're eating it. Now, these katayaki, if you find a katayaki shop in Nabari, which is one of the main places that produces katayaki, and you go there in the morning when they are freshly made, you get to experience them in this weird, soft, yet at the same time firm, I don't have words for it. I don't have a way to properly describe the texture of it, but it is a true snack experience. So the areas of Nabari and Iga are just absolutely, absolutely wonderful. Now, there's an entire section of Japan to the west of this, and there is so much to cover in there, but surprisingly, I skipped over a lot of it and went directly into a very famous place of Hiroshima. But very close to Hiroshima, there's another very famous place called Miyajima Island. And Miyajima Island, or just Miyajima, is known for a giant torii gate, or red or orange gate, that is out in the water, and how it looks depends on the tide. Sometimes it is submerged, sometimes it is not, and you can actually walk right out to it, as well as deer that just kind of, similar to Nara, deer that just kind of roam the area and will come right up to you. They're very, very friendly. But there is a small secret to this area, if you really, really want to get the feel for it. Everybody goes out there in the middle of the day. Well, I'd say late morning to early evening. But the area really, really starts to show its true colors if you go out and stay past the time where everybody's left. Now, I had a friend who lived on that island, and I had the chance to spend a night there. And the night that I spent there really, really gave you a feel. Once all the visitors and tourists are gone, the locals wander the area in jimbei, which is kind of like a two-piece old Japanese summer outfit, providing that it's summer. You're probably not going to see that in the winter, obviously. But basically, they will wander the area in traditional Japanese clothes. There is a nice outdoor drinking culture. It feels very local and feels very alive. And the liveliness of the area after all the tourists have gone really, really stuck with me through the years and gave me this fond memory of really being in what felt like a more traditional aspect of Japan. Now, the people that I did talk to were all very polite, very friendly, very giving. And so if you have the opportunity, I haven't actually taken a look to see if there are hotels right on the island, but if you have the opportunity to stay there overnight, I highly, highly recommend it. Grab yourself, you know, if you drink, grab yourself maybe a beer or a wine or sake or something and head out after dark and just meet some people. Smile, great, have a great time. So I'm going to go kind of directly south of that to what regular viewers will know as my new favorite island in all of Japan. My very first trip to Japan, I traveled all over the place, but there were two places that I skipped. And half of it was I kind of wanted to leave some stuff for later when I would come back again. And half of it was I was like, oh, I don't really need to go there. Really, really amateur move, by the way. You see, I kind of wanted to leave Okinawa for the future because Okinawa is a place all of its own. And I'm not going to cover Okinawa in this because I haven't been there. But Japanese people tend to say that Okinawa is Japan, but at the same time, it is not Japan. It's one of those things that you have to go out and kind of experience for yourself, etc., etc. But the other place I skipped was the entire island of Shikoku. And I got the chance to visit Shikoku for the very first time a couple of years back, maybe 4 or so years ago. And in the past 4 years, I have gone back again and again and again. I have been there well over 20 times. I have done entire pieces of content and podcast episodes on the area. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a machine gun, boom, 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 little summary of each of the spots that I recommend and why. So starting with the area of Kochi, which is just a really beautiful area to go to. There's like lighthouses and the town is gorgeous. There's so much to actually do in the area. Kochi is really good. Uwajima will give you that old Japan feel. If you want to feel what it is like to go into the past and experience what Japan was like long ago, whether it be 20, 30, 50 years, Uwajima is really, really well preserved. I did, I think, one or two podcasts in that area. One was, I think, called something to do with Omotenashi, and the other one was called Japan's Hidden Secret. That is in the list of podcast episodes, and I talk about how, like, really the heart of old Japan is hidden in this area. The city of Matsuyama is a spectacular place to go because not only is transportation fairly easy in the area, but it has everything. There is a city there. Within the city, there is a castle. Just 30 minutes away from there, there is the beach and the ocean. There are islands that you can go to via ferry. If you go 30 minutes in the opposite direction, there are mountains. There's no shortage of temples. In fact, there are temples on top of mountains that you can climb. You could spend months in Matsushima and do something different every single day and still not see the entire area. Yawatahama is, again, one of my favorite places for the people. The people are so nice. You get to Yawatahama, you can rent a bicycle and explore the area. It's also a very visually spectacular area, just like Imabari. And if you haven't listened to the episode on Japan's Hidden Secret, I highly, highly recommend it. It will give you, hopefully, an overview of why I have fallen in love with the area of Shikoku. And a large part of it is just there's so much untouched Japan in that area. And although on the surface, if you were to look at it on a map, it doesn't ring bells as being the most famous area. But if you want to meet great people, have good food, see visually spectacular Japan, and really get a feel for what the country is now and what it used to be, it is a stop that you need to put on your list. It is important to mention that, again, Shikoku can be accessed by train. However, it's one of the places that would be a lot easier to get enjoyment out of by accessing it via something like a rental car. Now, if you are sticking to main areas, for example, like Yawatahama, Matsuyama, or going up to Imabari, all of this can be done via train. And even when you get off at the stations, there are no shortage of places to rent bicycles. And I personally think that exploring Japan via bicycle, especially within each little area, is one of the best ways to do it because you cover more ground than you would on foot, but still at a speed where you get to take in everything that is around you, a speed where you can easily stop and you don't have to worry about finding parking or this, that, the next thing. And one of the great things is a lot of the places that have rental bicycles outside of Tokyo have these power assist bicycles where as long as you lightly pedal, there is a motor there that will kind of help you along the way. So if you get into an area that is more mountainous or has hills, a power assist bicycle is a fantastic tool to help you explore. I just really, really can't express enough how much I recommend the area of Shikoku. But if we head even a little more west, one of the areas that I first stayed in when I came to Japan is an area known as Yamaguchi. Now, Yamaguchi is the prefecture that is basically on the southwesternmost tip of Honshu, the main island of Japan. And it's got so much culture. There's entire areas that are just filled and lined with some of the oldest and best preserved traditional homes in Japan. There are local foods and everything in the area. One of my personal favorites, and I was really shocked when I tried it for the first time because they described it to me and I was like, there's no way that's a thing, but it's called Kawara Soba. And Kawara are basically Japanese ceramic roof tiles, those slightly curved ones. And what they do is they take a heated roof tile, obviously not one that's being used on the roof, one that's used for cooking, and they take this green soba noodles and put it on top, and they put a bit of meat on top and green onions and some shredded like scrambled egg kind of thing, and you mix it all up and you get this fried, slightly crispy soba. The word I'm looking for is soba noodles. And the texture is really a big part of it. You then pick it up with your chopsticks and you put it in this dish that you use to dip it. And it's a true interesting dining experience, which is local to that area. If you are going to be in Tokyo, and you don't have the chance to eat at a place like that, there are some Yamaguchi ryori or Yamaguchi cooking restaurants within Tokyo that do serve that dish. So if you were to Google like Tokyo Yamaguchi food, I believe one is called like Fuku no Hana or something like that. If I find it, I will try to link it in the podcast description. But considering how late we are in the podcast, I may forget, so I apologize. But the opportunity to try the food from that area is a really, really big part. And it's something that is really enjoyable. Now, the things I would say probably one of the best places to go if you were to go to the area of Yamaguchi, there's one city in particular, and it is called Shimonoseki. Shimonoseki is basically the southwesternmost city on the main, like just in that area. And it's right at the bottom tip of Honshu, and there's so much to do in the city. There is a mountain there called Hinoyama that I absolutely love. You can climb up the mountain in all of about 30, maybe 40 minutes, and you can see Honshu, and you can see Kamon Strait, which separates Honshu and Kyushu. You can look between the two islands, and then there's a bridge that connects the two islands, and you can actually, there's an underground tunnel that you can use to walk right across the bridge to Kyushu. And I don't know if they still have it because I haven't been there for years, but there's like a stamp thing where you get half a stamp on one side and then you get to the other side and you can do the other half of the stamp. The area is just a really great area. It's also well known for Japanese fugu, which is blowfish, one of those high risk Japanese meals. And my personal recommendation, there is a fish market, kind of like how like Tokyo has Tsukiji. I cannot remember the name of it off the top of my head, but there is a fish market in Shimonoseki. And if you go there for breakfast, they have a very cheap breakfast fugu set. Fugu, and one of the reasons I'm recommending this is just because fugu, by its nature, is a very, very pricey food. You can eat it in Tokyo, but I think the last time that I went out for a meal of fugu in Tokyo, there was four of us. We split up maybe six or seven dishes between the four of us, and our bill was several hundred dollars. So it is not a cheap food to have, but it is rather interesting. So Yamaguchi and the area of Shimonoseki is very high on the recommendations list. Again, also very much accessible by the Shinkansen if you have like the JR pass or if you're just using trains. But you cross right over to the island of Kyushu and you'll come to my single favorite city in all of Japan. In the area of Kita Kyushu, there is a city called Kokura. And Kokura is incredible. And I know, I'm sorry if I'm repeating and overlapping here, but it had to be in this episode. I know I've talked about this before, but Kokura, what makes it amazing is that in Kokura City, there is a castle. And right beside this castle, there is one of the most modern and futuristic looking shopping centers that I have ever seen in my life. And the juxtaposition between these two is gorgeous. I highly, highly advise Googling Kokura Castle and just scrolling through until you find the picture of the two of them, or even just maybe drop a pin in Google Maps at the castle and wander around until you find it. It is just, it's a really, really, there's just something visually spectacular about being there and seeing the gap between the two of those. The area of Kita Kyushu itself is a great area. And if you would go a little more south, you get into areas like, you know, Fukuoka and everything like that. And I at this point, I'm starting to realize just how many places I've added to this list. Like this has been quite extensive. We're going on, I'd say about 45 minutes at this point. So I don't want this to be too much of an information overload. And I think this at its surface has been a fairly comprehensive list. So we're going to pause it right here. I definitely feel a part two or maybe even a part three coming up in the future. But I hope that this has given you an idea of some of the better places. Sorry, I knocked the mic stand there. I hope that this has given you an idea of some of the great places there are to visit outside of Tokyo. There really is no shortage. I could probably sit and list every single place that I know that's great to visit and go into a little less detail than I have here and end up with a 3 to 4 hour podcast episode. And that in its own, I think we all know, would just be a little exhausting. On that note, it would mean a lot to me if this podcast episode has given you value, if you've learned anything, if you've just enjoyed it. It would really actually make my day if you would take a few seconds when you wrap up with this episode just to jump onto iTunes and leave a review. Each one of those reviews, no matter what your feelings of the podcast, are really helpful to have on there. And if you have any, like, you know, additional ideas or thoughts on the podcast, you know, you can hit me up on Instagram or Twitter or any of that. I'm always really happy to hear from you guys. You know, I love talking about the podcast and the content with you. So I would love it if you would just take a few seconds out of your day to leave a review. It really would make my day. Just sunshine coming out, just happiness all over the place. Now that I'm done with that part, I just want to say thank you guys so much for joining this episode. I really do hope that it has been a useful episode for you. And if you've been to any of these places, I'd love to know what you think. So you know where my DMs are. Otherwise, I will link as much of that stuff as I can in the description box of this podcast. I will see you over on the reviews section, and I will talk to you guys again real soon.